Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network.
Everybody, welcome back to another episode of Group Answers. So glad that you're joining us. My name is Chris Surratt, and I'm going to be your in-studio host today. But we also have co-host Brian Daniel, who happens to be on the road via phone joining us. So what's up, Brian?
Here, here. It's a good day. We talk about summer all the time, but we are finally there, Chris.
We are. You know, the only problem is we, in Nashville, we skipped spring. I mean, we had like 2 days.
Is that true?
Yeah. We had like 2 days of 70-something, and suddenly it was like 98 degrees.
Well, you're right. We didn't have that spell of cold weather that we do a lot of times. But
no.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
In South Carolina.
It's okay. We got golf. We got baseball. Everything's good.
In South Carolina, they call it the peach freeze, because what happens is it warms up, peaches start growing, and then it freezes again, and it freezes all the peaches. So, did you know, Brian Daniel, do you know the number one state for producing peaches? Do you know what it is?
Georgia. Georgia.
You would be wrong. It's South Carolina. Even though Georgia is the peach state,
right?
That
had trick question
written all over it. Do what?
That had trick question written all over
it. It did, and I'm glad you went for the trick. But it actually is South Carolina. So, anyways, we digress. We're excited today to have our guest. This is his first time, not only on this podcast, but he informed me right before we started any podcast. So we're glad.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
Reed has never been on a podcast before.
Reed Patton has never been on a podcast before.
Never once.
So anyways, let me tell you a little bit about Reed. Reed Patton is a content editor for the short-term discipleship team at Lifeway Christian Resources. He is the thankful husband of Kristen and proud father of, let me make sure I'm getting this right. What is your child's name?
Seeley.
Seeley. I was going to say Seeley. Just want to make sure. And serves with the Life Group leadership team at the church at Station Hill in Spring Hill, Tennessee. And that's a part of the Brentwood Baptist Church.
It is. It's the first regional campus of Brentwood Baptist.
Yeah.
One of now eight.
Eight. And you do like groups training and all that stuff there?
I do. I used to be a groups pastor at one of our campuses before I came to work at Lifeway at the Franklin, West Franklin campus. But so right now I lead a group myself. My wife and I host a group in our home. But beyond that, I give leadership to our overall groups, doing training with new group leaders. That's a lot of onboarding and helping them kind of be familiar with our systems and how we do things, what small groups look like at the church at Station Hill. And that involves just coaching and guiding a couple of small group leaders as well.
That's awesome. And you're available via Twitter at J. Reed Patton. Do you have a website or a blog or anything?
I don't. I just stick to Twitter.
Wow. You need to make that happen.
Maybe someday.
And he's also a big NBA fan, so we have some fun discussions around that. Now, what is your team?
So I grew up being a Charlotte Hornets fan, which is kind of random because I'm from Birmingham, Alabama, but they were the team of the 90s, and I grew up in the 90s, so I was a big Charlotte Hornets fan. When they became the Bobcats, I kind of was like, yeah, I'm not really super interested in that. And sort of transitioned over to the Hawks, but then now the Hornets are back. The buzz is back, so they say. So I'm sort of somewhere in the middle of a Hawks and a Hornets fan.
Okay, so kind of bouncing around. None of them win, so.
No, none of them win.
It's
but
kind of sad.
The Hawks are at least fun.
Yeah, that's true.
They're fun.
They've got a good young team. Yeah.
Good young core. They've got some solid veteran. They had Vince Carter this past year, so that was pretty fun.
What's he like, 55 at this point?
He's coming back for a 22nd season,
which is
a record, I'm told.
That's incredible. Yeah, he played for the Rockets for a bit, which is my team, and it was fun to watch.
And I would add that Reed is the veritable opposite of a fair weather fan, it seems like, given those two teams.
That's true. I was going to say bandwagoner, but none of those teams have had bandwagoners.
No, never.
I mean, if you grew up in Birmingham, it seems like you'd go Lakers or Celtics or Bulls or Warriors or something. So, way to go, Reed.
Yeah. Well, historically, Atlanta is 2 hours from Birmingham, so it's the closest metropolitan area. So I kind of got locked in. I'm a big Braves fan. I don't really care about NFL, but if I did, I'd be a Falcons fan. So the Atlanta thing is more continuity than anything else.
I was kind of hoping that the Hawks were going to get Zion Williamson.
I would, too. I
thought that would have been a fun fit for him.
Well, and they have a better developmental thing because, like, a lot of these teams are so bad, you just want – you want to see a player that has that much potential go to a place where they could develop. And, you know, the Hawks a couple years ago took the assistant GM from Golden State that helped build that monster over there. So they have a better developmental – they have good engaged owners, which is a lot different than some of these other lottery teams. So – wasn't to be, though.
Yeah, well. Well, since we've lost about half of our audience at this point, we should probably get to the topic. But we invited Reed to be a part of this because he does a lot of writing. He writes a lot of studies. Before you were part of the short-term team, you were part of the custom team. So you write a lot. You wrote a lot of sermon-based type studies, which we were talking right before we went live with this. That it's kind of what you still do, right? You still, even in your position now, you're writing a lot of studies based on messages.
Right. So all of our short-term studies are video-based. So we're bringing that expert teacher, that trusted voice, as we like to call it, into our small group environment. So all of our studies are really geared into some type of video message from an authoritative voice.
Yeah. So what's a couple of recent studies that you have worked on that you've written for Lifeway?
So I wrote largely Greg Mott's new study, Difference Makers, which comes out as of the date of this recording in a couple of days.
Okay.
So Difference Makers, that'll be a trade book with Greg Mott, who's the pastor at Houston's First Baptist Church.
Yep.
Before that, I have worked, we just recently got done working on a project with Ben Stewart from Passion City Church, mm-hmm. D.C., called Life and Love. I mean, so far this year, we have a couple of Tony Evans projects out. We have a Gospel Coalition project called Imago Dei, done a project with J.D. Greer this year. Also, I wrote that, but that was mostly comprised from his blog post and some other things. So that was more of a strong editing job.
So do you take a lot of times something like that and voice it in his voice?
Correct.
Take most of his content but make it usable by groups? Is that your job?
That's the starting point, and then fill in the gaps, kind of add in. If I feel like there's something that needs to be tied up or a point that's made that's not really suitable for groups as it stands to really bring that into a fruitful groups-based discussion or individual personal study kind of discussion. So a lot of it is trying to match their voice and the quality, because they're at the end of the day, their name's on the front of the book.
Right.
So it's their voice, it's their message. I'm just trying to put it in a context that's usable for what we do.
This is not totally on the topic, but fascinating to me. Do you get a lot of feedback from authors on that's just not what I meant? Or most of the time, they're pretty easy to work with without naming names?
Yeah, they're all pretty easy to work with. And I would say that when we send out our products before they release for author review, any edits that an author makes are always helpful. Like, they're never like something we're shrugging our shoulders with or gnashing our teeth at. They're always things that make whatever it is that their message is a little bit clearer. And a lot of it is just kind of minutia, like stuff that I don't know that most people would notice, but if they do, it makes it clearer and better and more in line with what they originally thought when they came up with it.
Yeah, well, that's good. So let's get down to what we're going to talk about, and that's how to lead a discussion in a group and how to ask good questions, because that's your job. That's what you do. You write the questions, and hopefully you're writing it in a way that me as a small group leader, like, for instance, you wrote Making Space, right? For Jeff Vanderstelt?
I edited Making Space, which a lot of what I do as an editor is make the questions that we've been given better.
So my group just finished it up last night. We did the last session, hospitality. And so for a study to be successful in my group, the questions have to be worded in a way that brings good conversation,
right?
That pushes it down the field. So let's talk about some of those things. So if I'm using a pre-written curriculum, and like, let's say, Making Space, something you've worked on, or J.D. Greer's new one, how can I, as a leader, make the most out of those questions? Is it just going through them 1 to 10, or how can I use those in a way that works best for my group?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question, and it's a thing that in training leaders pretty frequently, I find people have a harder time with. I would say that me as a being someone that has now written these things for, 7 years now, I don't know your group better than you do as a leader. So there may be questions that have been written in the curriculum that just simply don't work for your group, just for one reason or another. Maybe there's some hot button issue that's come up or some disagreement. But the person who's writing a Bible study, if you're using a pre-written curriculum, they don't know your group as well as you do. So the thing that I always encourage people to do is feel freedom to not use the questions. Like maybe you're using half of them. Maybe you're using all of them. Maybe you're just tweaking them a little bit so they're different and fit better. But I would take them as a starting point, not as a rubric that you have to get through each, mm-hmm. you know, if there are 10 questions that you have to hit all 10 of those questions. I think that kind of thing causes more stress, not only on you as a leader, but as on the people in your group too.
Yeah, and I think a good way to do that is be prepared before the group meeting.
Right.
I always go through the questions, and what I'll do is I'll star the ones that I think, okay, this will fit our group. I'm definitely going to hit those. The ones that, you know, I'll have some bonus ones that I think, okay, if we go this direction, we'll do those questions or we'll go off on that. But just kind of knowing ahead of time which questions you're going to hit. So when you're writing questions, do you write more than you think a group will need for a session?
That's my typical way of doing it. I would rather give somebody more than they need than less than they need to where they're scrambling. Because in general, I mean, I lead a group. I've led a group for 10 years now. And I think I can fill up 60 minutes of time with 6 questions in my group. I tend to focus on the 8 to 10 range when we're doing stuff. And I'll probably write 8 to 10 questions myself if I'm leading a group. I won't use 8 to 10 questions, but I have them kind of there at my disposal.
What guides your core beliefs? Are they founded on solid truth? Or are they based on others' opinions or your own emotions? What you believe about your purpose and value affects almost every area of your life. This is the premise of the new film Overcomer in theaters August 23rd. It's the latest from the Kendrick brothers, makers of Courageous, War Room, and others. This movie has inspired the creation of several resources. For small groups, there is the Overcomer Bible Study. For individuals, there's a book called Defined. Both are based upon powerful insights from the book of Ephesians. Learn more about all the resources at lifeway.com/overcomer. Brian, you lead a group, and I've led a group for a long time. Is that how you structure your questions?
That's a really good, I think it's a really good conversation to have. And I can tell you a little bit of the background, even before Reed's time with our team, is that we did some research on that. And as a group leader, I'm more in line with Reed. I would rather have more than I need and pick and choose and even add for different reasons. So the more questions I have, the more it becomes apparent where the curriculum writer or where the author is trying to take our group. And that gives me a better idea of how I want to manage the time and how I want to guide the group. But what we heard when we talked to people more often than not was they wanted us to try and get that exactly right, like 6 to 8 questions, which is, I think Reed would attest, is a lot. Well, we can do that, but like Reed said, we don't know your group. So I think the better rule is to give more than what they need. And I would rather have that as a group leader.
Yeah, I would too, definitely. I want to have some in my back pocket that if it goes that direction, I can use for sure. So let's talk about what type of questions invite conversation. Obviously, yes, no questions are not good.
Right.
But what types of questions do you tend to write that you think will bring good conversation in a group?
Well, obviously, you kind of already said it, Chris, is the open question is far superior to the closed question. And by that, a closed question is a question that's either yes or no, or there's just kind of one obvious answer. which those
Jesus.
Are, yeah, those are bad for a ton of reasons. Number one, they don't really lead to any kind of productive discussion. Number two, it's kind of insulting to the intelligence of the people in your group because it seems like you're trying to lead them to this, you know, pat answer that's already there and available. Open questions are going to be, you know, open-ended questions like that invite a variety of responses that aren't necessarily one thing, that there's not one clear, right, direct answer. Those kinds of questions lead to a more open conversation just because, excuse me, there's people feel like when they're answering, there's not some one answer that they're missing. Mm-hmm. And so I tend to find that when you're asking more open-ended questions, people feel more comfortable speaking. There's not one clear answer. And open-ended questions can take a lot of different kinds of forms. There's experience-based questions. There are questions that are rooted in the passage of Scripture that you're looking at. There's not one kind of open-ended question, but the best questions are going to be those ones that have a sense of conversation inside of them, meaning that there's a variety of answers that other people can kind of chime in.
So is there a place for a closed question but then quickly followed up by an open question? Do you ever do that where it's kind of a yes or no, if yes?
Yeah, I mean, I think sometimes those things are helpful, particularly when you're looking at like a biblical text. If you're saying, hey, Romans 8:1 says this, right? And asking a question to kind of level set the yeah. understanding of the text and then following it up. But the way I tend to do that as a writer is if I'm going to ask that kind of yes or no question, I just state the point mm-hmm. as a sentence and then ask the question.
That makes sense.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Then you ask what you really want and need to ask. So you state the answer so that everyone's on the same page, which is the only reason you would ask that question in the first place. It's just to move the conversation along and build consensus.
Yeah, kind of declared as a fact.
Four, yeah, in the four types of questions, I would call that an objective. So you avoid yes-no questions, but I would also avoid the opposite of that. And Reed, I would like your thoughts on that. I'd be interested in what you think about that. So the opposite of it, of a closed question, is something that's so open, I don't really know what you're asking. Like I've seen in Bible studies before a question along the lines of, so how do you react to this? Or what kind of emotions does this cause in you? And sometimes those are easy to answer, but sometimes they're pointless. And sometimes I don't really know as a group member where we're going with that kind of question. So it would be the opposite of the closed and yes, no. But I would agree with Reed, just because in a question economy, you really want to spend one of those 8 to 10 questions on something that's a closed question. Mm-hmm. So you've got to be really sensitive to your question economy or your word economy.
I'm curious on the emotion side, do you watch going too deep too quickly with as you're kind of structuring the questions? Because I know with some studies, there can be questions, you know, too early in the study that kind of opens up too many things, or group members are not ready to kind of go there yet. So do you pay attention to that as you're writing a study?
Yeah, of course. I think that, you know, if you want to think about it that broadly, there are going to be three types of questions in every Bible study. There's going to be your observational questions, which are, what does the Bible say? You're looking at that. Those don't have to be yes or no questions. Those are, you know, kind of, it could be, what all does it say about this in this passage? Or, you know, when Jesus said this, what do you think he meant? Those kinds of questions are all observational. Then there's the interpretive question, which deals with that emotional space. It's dealing with the feeling center of who we are and how our heart is responding to something. And then there's the application-based question, which is, well, what do we do with that? And so a good Bible study is going to balance between those three types of questions. And my preference would always be to start walking into the topic or the text, whatever it is, so that you get to that place of understanding before you then kind of pull back and say, well, how do you feel about that?
That's good. And do you find icebreaker type questions, just kind of open, more fun questions, are helpful always at the beginning, or more when a group is getting to know each other? Do you try to keep that on topic?
My group right now, for example, has been together for 2 years, and there are 20 people total, but on an average week you've got, I mean, y'all know how that works. There's like 12 to 14 people.
Yep.
In my house. And so we're at the place where we know each other pretty well. We're not going to really learn much about each other and that icebreaker stuff. So I kind of skip that phase.
I do too. I'm curious. What I like to do is kind of follow up on the week before and say, you know, we talked about this last week. Any thoughts? You know, did you see anything this week that kind of opened your mind about that topic? And that's more of the icebreakers that we do nowadays.
Yeah, a lot of times I'll kind of throw out just a standard, because our group does sermon aligned curriculum. So, hey, what did you hear today that really stuck out to you? Because the answers that are given there will kind of let me know where to lead the group going forward. Because you're able to tell, well, oh, this is a thing that we need to come back and address.
Yeah, that's good.
Well, I think it's important to remember the objective of the icebreaker, whether you call it a question or not, and that's just to build rapport and to get everyone engaged in the conversation. So, you know, we have strayed away from an icebreaker type warm-up question that is off topic and doing more, Chris, like what you said. You asked about last week, any remnants, or like Reed said, from anything from the sermon. I think it does need to be, I hate the term, but lighter in expectation, and so it's something that prompts an immediate and quick reaction and not something that's provocative in any kind of emotional or intellectual way. But the idea is to get people engaged. I know in the past I've actually just told a story or found something that I saw on social media or something anecdotal from the week and just told a story just to get people engaged and laughing. It could be a current event that borders on the absurd, just to get everyone engaged in the group time. That's the point there at the top of the meeting.
Yeah, something topical. Like the study we just did this week, it was on hospitality. I thought it was a great opening question. It was just, where have you experienced amazing hospitality? And that just opened up some incredible stories, like people who have been in certain hotels and this is why they were there and this was the vacation. So it went even beyond kind of what we were getting at. We got to know them a little bit through that question, but it was on the topic as well. So I think when you can tie those two together, that helps.
Yeah, one of our values and one of the things that Reed and Joel, who's been on the show too, that they adhere to is that we're always in line with topic. I mean, you guys know that I came in the serendipity model, and all of our listeners may not be familiar with the icebreakers there, but they were crazy.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you were a car, what car would you be or something like that? And I think they serve the purpose, but I think you can accomplish the same thing, but also moving into this session's discussion, which I think is much more helpful and productive.
Yep. Reed, I want you to talk about, you have said before and written before that you think that all small groups should answer basically three big questions when it comes to a study. Can you talk about those for just a second?
Yeah. So the three questions are what, so what, and now what? And those apply to any text or topic that you pick up. I'll explain it more in a second. And this is not original to me. This is just a version of a pretty popular discipleship strategy that I've heard from other people and adapted a little bit myself. But basically what they are is the what is, so what does the Bible say? So if you're dealing with any kind of Bible study, what does the text say? What's being said? What's happening here? It's building that knowledge base, the head, if you will, understanding of knowing what is being said, what's happening, the actual plot, the characters involved, and kind of the big takeaways. The so what is it? So what do we do with that? Why does that matter? Why is it a thing that we should spend our time reading about? Like, why is this story in the Bible, or why is this a topic that we as Christians need to know about? And so that's really looking at the emotional center or the heart or the feeling of behind everything. That's more that interpretive question. So what should I, if this is true, if we can know this, what am I supposed to do with it? And then the last one is the now what, which is like, now what do we do with it? So I've heard this stuff. I know this stuff. We can agree on this. I've kind of seen how this should affect the way that I believe and the way that I feel about life, about Jesus, about other people. Well, what am I going to do with it? That's the hands-based, the application-based question that leads people into some sort of practical answer. I think that if you any balanced Bible study is going to include equal parts of those questions that kind of take you through that whole perspective, because then what you're dealing with is you have a holistic approach to the text, which is giving you a holistic disciple, somebody that's not just seeking to fill their head with knowledge or not just seeking to have an emotional experience or not just going and doing something that's not based on some deeper truth. Because as a ministry, as a groups ministry here at Lifeway, we're about transformation. And it's not just the acquisition of facts or feeling a certain way or being productive and doing a certain thing. It's about all three of those things coming together.
That's good. So again, that's what? What does the Bible say? So what should I feel about that? And then now what should I do? And I think no matter what type of study you're leading, if you hit those three things, you've accomplished a good Bible study, a good discussion. And we'll have those in the show notes, so you can check those out as well. But we need to wrap it up. But thanks, Reed. This is really, really helpful. And I don't think as small group leaders, we always think about the questions that we're asking, why we're asking them, how should they be structured. But that's really good to think about. So thanks so much for being a part of this.
Yeah, great. Glad to be here.
And we want to give you guys a chance to win some stuff. That's always fun. So we're giving away a couple of sets of my recent book called Leading Small Groups, which actually I have that outline in there as well about asking questions. So it might be helpful for you as you lead a group. But you can win that, and we're giving them in sets of five. So we have two sets of five. And the way that you can win those is just going to the Lifeway Groups Ministry Twitter, which is at Lifeway Groups, or Facebook, which is facebook.com/Lifeway Groups. And tag us and give us a suggested topic for group answers. We're always wanting to know new topics. What would you like to hear about? Who would you like to listen to? So all you have to do is go to our Twitter, tag us, or Facebook page, and put in a topic, and then we'll pick a couple of people to win five copies of Leading Small Groups. I think that's a pretty good deal. What do you think, Brian?
I think it's a great deal, and I'm glad that you decided to do that.
There we go. Yes, all on my own.
So Chris could have been selling those books.
I know. I'm going to lose money right here. Not that I would make any, but I could be losing.
But you're gaining friends.
There you go. We also want to mention we're a part of the Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network, and if you haven't checked out Rainer on Leadership lately, you should do that. It's with Tom Rainer and Jonathan Howe. And they're a part of the family, the network family. And they've recently covered relevant topics like the 7 habits of highly effective preachers, 8 church fights that are fading, and 4 thoughts on ordination. So just look up Rainer on Leadership on your favorite podcasting app and subscribe today. And speaking of subscribing, subscribe if you haven't to Group Answers and rate us. We would love to get a rating, and it helps kind of get the podcast out there. And then if you'd like to share it with somebody else, because the more downloads that happen, the more exposure Group Answers gets, and we would love to have that happen. All right, that's going to wrap it up for this episode. Want to thank again Reed Patton for being a part of this, and my co-host on the road, Brian Daniel, again, still alive, driving.
Yep. Well, yeah. I wasn't driving. We weren't driving. Wasn't driving in podcasting.
Okay, good. Because you never should drive in podcast.
Everyone be cool.
Don't drive in podcast. All right. We'll see you guys next time for another episode of Group Answers.